Hey, sports fans, it's world champion Andy Gepper, Mike North. Punch this number in your phone right now. If you're driving, pull over. 1-800-808-3419. 1-800-808-3419 for a free pick and info for the premier handicapping site in the country, Vegas Scores and Odds.com. It's the only site you'll ever need with expert handicappers like John Anthony, Denny Macklin, Tony Sacco, Ray Monahan, yours truly, and many more. Check out the homepage of Vegas Scores and Odds.com for a tote board with your buddy. Follow Vegas Scores and Odds on Twitter and dial up 1-800-808-3419. It's 1-800-808-3419, 1-800-808-3419, or go to VegasScoresAndOdds.com.
What follows is for news and entertainment purposes only. Any use of the forthcoming information in violation of any federal, state, or local law is prohibited. Mike North, you are on fire.
You know anybody else that good?
No.
No, they'll tell you they are. They may think they are, but we're documented every single week. The eye is on us.
That's
and I
right.
ain't talking about the eye of CBS, the public eye. The first feeling I got when I won a bet was elation. The worst feeling was when I lost a bet and I wanted to jump off a balcony.
Give me a quick betting tip.
Yeah, do win and don't lose, but usually it doesn't always work out that way. How many times you heard this? I'm going to Vegas. I go, how'd you do? Well, if I lost $4,000, but you know, you go there to have fun. No, you go there to win. And that's what's wrong with people. They have the negative mentality in anything they do, including sports, before you even laid the bet down. So you gotta be positive. Vegas Scores and Odds is the landing place that gave me an opportunity to handicap. They let me show what I could do. And there's packages, there's free picks. What does Vegas Scores and Odds do when you perform? They reward you and they take care of you, and that's why we're ready to do this show.
The Vegas Scores and Odds Advantage with Mike North starts right now. That's right, Vegas Scores and Odds Advantage with Mike North starts right now. I am Aldo Gandia, Mike's wingman, and it is Monday, and that usually means we go through every NFL game, but today we have a very, very special guest. Mike will introduce him, and then after the interview, we'll touch on the Chicago Bears and a few other NFL games. Mike North, how are you, my friend?
I'm great, Aldo, and what a way to start a Monday off with one of my favorite people in the world, really, when you stop and think about it, especially in the media world. You know what? I could put the people I like in the media in the phone booth, and there'd be enough room for a dance floor, to be honest with you. But this guy was special. He really helped the score back in 92. We had guys like Ditka. We had other people coming on, but when you had the announcer for the Chicago White Sox that would come on, that wouldn't duck you, that was ready to face the music, and then you had to be ready to face his music. We became friends, and then at the first score golf outing, it was a downpour. I'll never forget this crazy guy driving his golf cart across a fairway there with the rain pouring. He was still out there having some fun. I just want to just say congratulations on everybody from everybody at the bar room. From you, Aldo, to everybody else on this great honor that we have with the great Ken the Hawk Harrelson, Hall of Fame Ford Frick winner for this year, this coming year. And Hawk, first of all, welcome to the show. And I got to believe you were sort of worried a little bit because, you know, you were never really a campaigner, so to speak, were you?
No, I didn't. In fact, Bob Graham and Scott Reifert and I talked about that, and those are two guys like my son, you know, and they suggested that we don't do any campaigning, and we didn't, and I wasn't worried, though. I'll tell you why, because of the fact that I thought I would get in one day, but I thought it would be when I was dead, you know, but this came really so good because of the fact that now I can celebrate it with my beautiful wife, Eris, and you would be, you know, and celebrate with my friends and our children and our grandchildren. And I tell you, it's been overwhelming. I knew it was going to be big, but I didn't know it was going to be this big.
Well, you know what I was worried about? Because there's the shot of you taking the phone call. I remember when Juan Santo, it was all set up that he was going to go in. And he took the phone call, and it was a phone call saying he didn't make it. And it went viral, and it was a sad time for Ronnie because that really crushed him, I thought. And I don't know if they still do that, but were you worried about that at all? I mean, was there a chance the call could come in and say you didn't make it this year?
Well, they don't. They only call the winner, the nominees that are in there. And I thought that they called everybody to let them know because they said, sure. They called me about a week and a half before and said, this is what we're going to do. That was the process. And we're going to call at 11 o'clock. And we're gonna let the guy know who the nominee is and who's going in. So then we were here, and my wife was here, our son Casey was here, and then I didn't know AJ was here. They were standing in the back in the hallway, and also Robert Dameron. And AJ and Robert are just like sons to us. And all of a sudden, it got to be 11, then it got to be 11:10, then it got to be 11:15, 11:20, and I'm saying, uh-oh. So then when it hit 11:25, the phone rings, and I look at it, and I pick it up, and underneath it said Cooperstown. And when it did that, I didn't know what to do. It's like I had a brain cramp. Like my mind went blank. And then Tim Meade got on. Tim. He's been around baseball for a long time and a great guy. He got on and explained what was going on and congratulated me on being the nominee for 2020. And we talked for about 15 to 20 minutes, and then we hung up. And when we did, of course, Aris and Krista, our daughter, Casey, our son, rather, and AJ and Robert, we all started hugging each other, and it just hadn't stopped. So this is something you dream about, Mikey, from the time you're a kid, playing Little League baseball,
Sure.
You bust your behind, and my mama, I was a mama's boy, always was and always will be. And she used to tell me a lot of times when I was in the Little League, I was something, I guess, of a child sports prodigy. And she used to tell me, well, son, one day you're going to be in the Hall of Fame. One day you're going to be in the Hall of Fame. And she really had me believing that, and she really had me working for that. And then I went on to start, playing baseball, basketball, football, golf, everything. And she was behind me all the way. She was divorced when I was young, and she loved her boy, and her boy loved her. Everybody in Savannah knew that too. And in fact, we'd go play some place, and they would have a big sign posted on the banner there. Mama's boy, they didn't know.
I'll tell you what, you may be a mama's boy, but in certain ways, I'll tell you this. I'm not one of those broadcasters. Back in the day when I got hired, folks, no brag, just fact, you had to know the stuff. You couldn't go to Wikipedia or a computer or anything else. And, so I don't have to look up Hawk Harrelson. I actually saw Hawk play, many times, being a White Sox fan. Many a night, whether it was in Cleveland for him in front of 2,000 people, Kansas City with the sheep on the hill that Charlie O had as an attraction, also to cut the thing. The Boston Red Sox, when Hawk Harrelson was brought in to take over for Tony Conigliaro, who had been injured badly, and Hawk helped them win the 67 pennant. So I don't need a refresher course. In fact, I remember going to a doubleheader with my uncle back, I think, in 65, 66 in July when Hawk played for the Athletics. So it's been a wild ride, but you know what? You broke your leg in 68. So you break your leg. You're also a rebel. You're not a guy that really cottons to authority, sort of like I was. I had a pretty rough upbringing with my father. Your father leaves when you're 8 years old. So you had retired from baseball a time or two. You went to play in the British Open. Just missed making the cut there, I believe. So you've traveled. You were one of those guys that I still think you were trying to find yourself, Hawk, after you got hurt in 68. I think you were an all-star player. You were only 5 years into the league. So this was the time you were in your prime, and then you broke your leg. Tell us a little bit about your mindset at that time, because your mother wanted you to make it in the Hall of Fame as a baseball player. She never dreamt that you would make the Hall of Fame as a 50-year announcer, player, and contributor. Tell me what your mindset was in 68 after breaking your leg.
Well, actually, it was in the spring of 70 when I broke my leg. I had my last 2 years I played, you know, I had two pretty good years. I was player of the year in 68, almost won the Triple Crown. And the last 2 years I played, I hit 65 home runs and drove in over 200 runs. So the leg was okay. It was broken, but I mean, it was the ankle, because I turned my foot all the way around backwards. You know, when I was lying on the ground there and I picked up my leg, my foot was pointing down. And that was the thing. And during that, I had a cast all the way up to my behind, you know, for a long time. And during that time, Mikey, I just lost interest in playing. I really did. And I had two good years. I was 28 years old, and I wanted to try something else, and I wanted to go into golf. And I did. And, of course, I got $220,000 worth of canceled checks to prove I cannot play golf. But I went in, and I had a bad temper, you know, and that helped me when I was playing football. That helped me when I was playing baseball. That helped me when I was playing basketball. Well, bad temper and golf don't mix. And I'd go out with 14 clubs, and I'd come back with five or six. And you can't beat those guys with five or six clubs. They're too good. And I won some tournaments, and I did. I led All-American qualifiers in 1972 at Muirfield in the British Open. And then I missed the cut by one shot. And because of my temper, I had met my fiance, Eris, and then we got married. And I broke all my clubs one day. I was playing in a mini tour down in Savannah, Georgia. And there were two-day tournaments, and so there were four of us that shot 68 the first day. There was Fuzzy, Bruce Litsky, Bill Rogers, and myself. And we were paired together the second day, and I shot myself out in the first nine. And I came in, and I took my clubs off the cart, and I broke every one of them. And I told my wife, I looked at her, and I saw Eris, and she was crying. And that right there is where I made up my mind. I was getting out of golf. And the Red Sox had called me the year before to come in as a DH, and I told them no, I wanted to give golf another year. And then I had told Eris that night, we sat up to about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and I told her what my decision was as far as quitting golf, and she was ecstatic. She was happy because she said, it's killing you. So what happened was Fuzzy and I were going to play these two guys for some money the next day, and that was going to be my last round of golf for a long time. And I would go to have breakfast, and the phone rings, and the server comes over and says, Hawk, this for you. And I got on the phone, and it was Mary Trank, who was Mr. Yawkey, Tom Yawkey, who owned the Red Sox, his secretary, and also Dick O'Connell, who was the president and general manager of the ball club. And he said, look, Johnny Pesky is retiring, and we want you to come up here and audition for the color job. And I went up, I auditioned, I got the job, and of course the rest was history 42 years later.
You know, Brickhouse, I grew up on all the announcers, from Jack Brickhouse to Lou Boudreau to Vince Lloyd, Jack Quinlan, who got killed tragically in a car accident, who was a great Cub announcer. He was just young, getting ready to go. They were all homers. Yet, I don't know if it was because it was the White Sox, because most of the people I just mentioned, except for Brickhouse, were Cub announcers. And Cub announcers were known as homers. Bob Elson was I wasn't a big fan, but a dry type announcer, never showed any positiveness towards even the White Sox. He was more of a straight-laced guy, and you came along. And I want to make a couple points. First of all, you made the Hall of Fame, and you had some, you know, people on social media saying, oh, he's nothing but a Sox homer, or he's nothing like this, or, you know, Hawk, you know, did the bidding for the... But you know what nobody said, Hawk? That you didn't deserve it. Every person that I've talked to said you deserved to make the Hall of Fame, number one. And number two, were you often puzzled by the fact that even though you were the Sox GM for a short time, it didn't work out, that's fine, but then Jerry Reinsdorf brings you in after some stints with the Yankees, you became more of a homer announcer, But were you puzzled by the fact that you were maybe about the 30th homer announcer in Chicago baseball history, that there were 29 before you, but people would give you the hard time about it?
That was a compliment. People calling me a homer, that was the biggest compliment they could pay me. In fact, Wall Street Journal does this thing, this story on homers in baseball. And hell, they judge me the winner going away, you know, because nobody said us or our or anybody more than I did. You know what? I got some great advice from Kurt Gowdy and also Howard Cosell about it. It's like you. That's the reason you became such a young Jigs. I'll tell you, y'all had a great show for so many years.
Thank you, Hawk.
And, you know, because of the fact that you said what you thought. And you didn't hold anything back. And that was one reason people tuned in. That's one reason y'all had great ratings. And I was the same way in baseball. They said, don't try to please everybody because you can't. So why try to do something that you can't do, especially in a two-team city? And I came here and I told everybody I ever worked with, I said, look, it's just like playing baseball. You got to get out there. You got to bust your ass every day. You got to go out there and you got to work hard. You can't take it just because you played the game for a while. You can't take it for granted. You got to be, when you walk in that booth, you have got to be prepared. So when you put that kind of dedication and work in there, then during the game, I just got into it just like the fans. And I wanted my Sox to win every day. And I really got upset. I really got pissed off when we beat ourselves. You're going to get beat a lot of times because you're going to face a Corey Kluber or, you know, Jake Arrieta, whoever. And they're going to hit the spots, and they're going to beat you. So you got to understand that. But I'll tell you one thing. When people call me a homer, it didn't upset me. It pleased me.
You know, Hawk, I got to ask you about the fact that when the White Sox weren't winning, and there's been a lot of years they weren't winning when you were announcer. I mean, 2005 was great. One of the top 10 calls of all time was, in fact, in my opinion, one of the top 10 games an announcer's ever had was the Burley perfect game with you, especially on the Dwayne Wise catch. Everybody that is anybody remembers that. And you know what? I never was mad at you for being a homer. But you and I used to go back and forth, but at least we did it to each other. When I'd say, are you masking anything? And you said, no, Mike, because the fans, including you, are smart enough. When I'm being quiet, that means I'm really mad, right?
Yep. I remember one day I was going out to hit some golf balls out to Bolingbrook, and I was driving back listening to you and Jigs, and you got on me so bad. I started laughing so hard. I had to pull over to the side of the road, and people who were passing by me must have thought I was either drunk or crazy or something because you were ripping my ass apart.
But you got the business, but you knew it was never personal, and that's the problem with today. And even with a lot of people back in the day, you never thought, well, maybe you did think it was personal because I was attacking the occupation or what you were doing, but you knew you were in the public eye, and that's why I think you were a homer too. Because you actually put a uniform on, and you knew what the ball player goes through. I don't care if you're Kurt Gowdy. I don't care if you're Lindsey Nelson, okay? I don't care if you're any of the great announcers of the past, Brett Musburger. They never put the uniform on where you could say, okay, he made an error, and guess what? I've been in that position when other guys, even like my wise-ass self, will say, you got to pick up that ball, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. You know, I tell you what, I love this game today more than I ever have. It's been interesting for you and I, you being such a big baseball fan and Chicago fan, that to see the evolution of the game and the way the way the game has changed. And, you know, when I played my era, most of the Latin guys, which there weren't that many, were not big guys. And now, you know, These Latin guys are coming in. They're 6'4", 6'5", 6'6", and they can play. And, you know, I was a tick above an average major league player. But today the guys who are a tick above an average major league player are so much better than we were. It's not even funny. Now, our superstars, as you know, would have been superstars today. You know, the Manly Mays and Musials and LK Lyons and guys like that. And they'd be superstars 100 years from now. But the average major league player today, and that's one reason I'm so excited about our Sox coming into next year. And what they got returned for Chris Sale, you know, and Juan and those guys, we are now, I don't think we're going to win it this year. We could be in contention. But I'll tell you what, in 2021, this club's got a chance to be a friggin' monster. I mean, with all the young talent that we've got, we got to get some of these guys our pitchers. So, you know, Kopech and those guys, you know, coming off Tommy John surgery. And that's one reason that I'm so anxious for the season to start, because I just really enjoy listening to Jason and Steve. You know, I think that Jason does a better job with Steve than I did.
You know what? You were the main attraction, and you know I had a number of partners too. You know, I had Dougie Buffone. You know, I've worked with Fred Huebner. You know, Dan Jiggins.
Yeah.
You did the same thing, and anytime you always, you know, change partners, the rumors were always negative. That goes for any duo that works together. When one of them leaves for whatever, it's because maybe they didn't get along. There wasn't enough work put in. Maybe some guys couldn't make it on time. I mean, did that ever bother you, the rumors and the gossip in the paper about stuff like that?
No. I've got a real thick skin, as you do. And whenever I read something negative, if I happened to see that writer that day, and Ted Williams was one that started me to think this way when I was playing with the Red Sox. He said, when somebody writes a bad article about you, the next day you see them, go up and smile at them. Don't even let them know you read it. Smile, say, how you doing today, Jimmy Jones or Sammy Smith? And I got in that habit, and once I read a bad article about myself, except for Mariotti, I hated that son of a bitch. But
wait a minute. I was just going to bring up, hold on, because, all right, I think that the thing is that you and I had a relationship, and anything we had to say, we said to each other. He was a different animal. We know what's happened to him since. He was, you know, a guy that would write and write a column. And look, the White Sox have been known to be cantankerous. I know this for a fact myself. Not you. I'm not saying you, but other members of the front office, if you will. Even Jerry's been mad at me a couple times. But the Mariotti thing where you two went at it in the press box, Hawk, it was portrayed that you were mad at him and you approached him and then you put your arms around his neck. You never really did a whole lot of denying. You did acknowledge that there was some sort of scrap, but was it over something that personally? Was it over the way he treated the franchise? What was it that really triggered you with him?
It was the lies that he kept printing about Reinsdorf. And whenever he needed, there were a couple other writers that did it, as you well know. But Jerry took it, you know, and he just, when he needed a story, it was like a couple of writers in New York. Whenever they needed a story, they'd go hit on Steinbrenner. When Mariotti and a couple other writers here needed a story, they'd go hit on Reinsdorf. And so that happened in Minnesota that day. What happened was, I didn't know he was there, and I was going to the press box to go up to the booth, and there was a real narrow walkway there. And he had his chair. He was leaning forward. He had his chair covering up the walkway. So all of a sudden, I walked about 6 or 7 feet down, and it really pissed me off. And I turned around, and I said, why don't you move your chair? And it was Mariotti. He gets up, comes over to me, and I knew what he was trying to do. I told him, I said, Jay, all you got to do is put one hand on me, and I will kick your ass all the way back to the hotel. And he was going to sue me. I got a letter from his lawyer. I never touched him. But he was just a bad guy. And I said that. I said that. In fact, after that incident, I was driving down to South Bend, and I was listening to a show. And I called. He said he had tweaked my notes, you know. And that really upset me. And I called the studio, and I told his producer there, I said, tell him to put me on. So he puts me on hold for a few seconds, comes back, and he said,
he didn't want you on the air. And I said, well, you tell him, I'm going to turn around. I'm going to come back, and I'm going to wait on him to come out of the studio, and we'll get this thing settled. And that's the kind of guy he was. He just, you know, he was just a liar, and he was just a bad person. And I said, he's going to run himself out of town, and he did.
You know, I got to ask you about the criticism of Jerry, because Jerry and I have been friends, but I've been very critical of him, too. It was an uneasy relationship at times, but he's always made time for me if I ever needed him to come on my show or anything like that. I do know that he feels this stuff, but you just brought up this year's team, and we need pitching, Hawk, and we need defense.
Oh, yeah.
We have hitting. And we're talking 14-9 games. Are we talking 9-8 games? You brought up something. We have really one dependable pitcher who had one good year so far, and I'm hoping he can repeat it and repeat it, Giolito. The other guys either have been hurt, they have some surgeries, they haven't responded. Lopez is in the mid-fives. I mean, we heard it was going to be 219, 220. Now I read something in Forbes the other day where a baseball scout says the Sox could be the toast of the town in 2022. I think the thing that bothers White Sox fans, Hawk, is nobody has really told them when the rebuild's supposed to end. But isn't that the case, that rebuilds end either by a team admitting they didn't get it done or by the rebuild actually eventually working?
Well, you just summed it up pretty good. Last year, we were really a bad defensive team. And, of course, if your pitching is shaky anyway, that bad defense is going to be, you know, it's just going to be standing out like a sore thumb. And what happened was that Tim Anderson came around. The first month and a half of last year, he was the worst shortstop in the American League. And in the last 4.5 months, he was one of the best. And that's what goes through. And then all of a sudden you go out and you pick up a good catcher and you go out and you re-sign Abreu and we've got a couple kids. They tell me this one, Robert, is just an unbelievable player. In fact, I was talking to Richard Dotson. You remember Dot?
Sure.
And he was the coach where Robert was. And he said, Hawk, with this kid playing center field, you don't even need a left or a right fielder. That's how fast he is. He's just a great. So now,
yeah, because I'm not big on Jimenez and left. I think with the Sox got about 5-6 DHs right now. They got to figure out who's going to step up defensively. You're right. The kid better be able to patrol between left and right because I don't know what's going to be out there defensively. I'm more concerned about the defense. You know this. If you don't pick up the ball, then it wears on your pitching staff. Now you're giving a team maybe 4 outs an inning, 2 or 3 times a game, and that seems to be what happened with the White Sox. And how fragile do you think are the pitching egos on this team, especially when you got guys like Kopech who have gone through surgery already and stuff like that?
Well, you know, the two rules, you've heard me say it many, many times on the broadcast, the two rules for me at winning at the major league level, first rule is you got to catch the ball. It's not pitching, it's not hitting, it's defense. Mm-hmm. Offense puts asses in seats. Defense wins games. And when you get a shaky pitching staff like we've had, and I'll tell you who did a great job was Rick Renteria. I mean, you know, the mark, and you know this, and getting back to it, let me just touch on this other thing. One of the reasons that Jerry and myself and all the guys liked you is because if you said something bad, you're still coming to clubhouse. You'd be right there.
Oh, my God.
You know.
Albert Bell wanted to rip my head off. Hey, you know how many – I've been threatened less on the street corner than I was in the Sox clubhouse sometimes, but that's just – hey, that's a locker room that listens. That's a locker room that listens to criticism, man.
Yeah, we,
and you know what?
I've been
pulled down there many times. But then you know what I said, Hawk? Let me ask you your opinion of this. I said, if they got a problem with me, let them come down to the studio. But you know what? I just think that when you go down there, would you agree that at times there was some hostile territory? I mean, you know what? Once the Mariotti thing hit, I stayed away from you for about a week. You know what I mean? I didn't need to be his follow-up yet. But don't you think at times that, like the Albert Bells of the world and some of those guys, there were some bad characters sometimes on some of those White Sox teams. Would you agree?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. That's all I wanted to hear.
But there was some of the guys that were upset with you, but they all respected you because you come down there and face them, you know.
I'll tell you, Ozzie was the best. Ozzie called up the radio show. Look, it was the time of our lives. It really was. You were in your, I was just rolling. You were in your prime. You basically established yourself as one of the top announcers in baseball history now. Who haven't you? Have you now? Have you heard from some people that you didn't think you'd ever hear from? Maybe people you thought didn't like you, or people you brushed off because maybe there was a problem. Have you heard from some of those people?
Yeah, yeah. This phone has been ringing off the hook since the announcement came at 12 o'clock that day, and it went national. And I have heard from several people that I really didn't care for, and they all called me up to congratulate me, and I am not. In fact, I've called a couple of guys who were on that list of nominees that I really didn't particularly care for, and I've called them and told them that everybody on that list should be in the Hall of Fame. It's to me. I mean, that was one of the strongest. In fact, Kim Meade told me, he said they thought this was the strongest field they've ever had, and you know, I call Mike Shannon. Mike Shannon should be in there. He should be in the Hall of Fame. He's 48 years with the Cardinals. 48 years, Mikey. I mean,
and a great ball player, by the way. A great ball player.
You dadgum right. He was a good player, hard nosed, busted his behind all the time. But that's what I was going to say about Renteria. The mark of a good manager is not wins and losses. The mark of a good manager are your eyes. You watch and see how hard those guys play for it. Will they run out that pop-up? Will they run out that soft two-hopper to first base? Or will they just loaf down there? Our guys bust their ass down that line for Renteria. And now the mark of a general manager is wins and losses because he's the one that puts behinds in uniforms. And Rick last year didn't have a good defense. He didn't have a good pitching staff. And it was still a fun club to watch because we got some prospects out there. And we got, I think the biggest asset we had last year was the specter of the minor league system, because there for a long time we didn't have a good minor league system at all. And we got guys getting hurt and everything else. And anytime you got to start trading your major league players for prospects, you know, you got a problem. And now we don't have to be doing that now because of the fact we just got to get some of these guys healthy. And I'll guarantee you this is going to be a one fun ball club to watch. For
I hope you're right, but you know what? Here you go again. Here you go again, popping champagne, all happy. Here's what I'm going to tell you. One thing, you know, I got my own instincts. You know, I made my bones by thinking the way I think. But there's no way in hell I believe Rick Hahn runs this baseball team. I think Kenny has run it all along. I think it's the same type of situation they have with the Bulls. I'm just telling you, I'm not asking you to comment on it. Now, Kenny's a one-hit wonder. I call him the one-hit wonder because I wanted him to repeat it. If they win again, I think that knocks them into another echelon. Until that time, this front office, and I think because of this, I know you start laughing, but because of the Bulls and because of the soccer program at the same time, there are people, and this isn't the first time people have soured on Jerry, and he's proved them wrong. You know what? But has Jerry sort of left the reservation a little bit, or is he still involved in the day-to-day stuff like he's been in the past?
Well, Jerry lets guys do their job. That's one thing. That's why all his employees there at the Sox. You know, we got guys that's been there 30 years, 35 years, 40 years.
Is that a good thing sometimes or a bad thing? Is that a good thing sometimes that guys have been there for 35 years, though?
Well, they're all good people, or they wouldn't have been there for 35, because Jerry's a tough guy. And I'll tell you one thing right now that, he owns the club, so he's going to be involved. He wants them to tell him what they're planning on doing. That's what he wants, and I just love the organization. You know, I love it, and he's the first guy to ever bring in a comprehensive drug program in baseball, and that goes for not just the players, that goes for the front office as well. Everybody that's an employee of the Chicago White Sox can be tested at any time, and he was the first guy to get tested, and I was the second guy to get tested. No, Eddie was. Eddie Einhorn was the second guy, and I was the third guy to get tested.
Did you pass?
So he's done so many good things, you know.
Did you pass?
As I said. Huh?
Did you pass?
Pass.
Was it an alcohol test? Was it a vodka test?
It wasn't a Smirnoff test. I would have failed.
Hawk, I got to let you go, buddy. I appreciate it. We got Eldo on the line. Eldo, I think we got any questions on the chat room real quick?
Well, I'll tell you, people are excited that Hawk Harrelson has made his second appearance here at Bears Barroom. Johnny Santucci, when you were telling the story about Jay Mariotti, he recalled that you called Mariota, Jay Mariota, a Heine bird.
Which, yeah.
You want to explain what that is, Hawk?
Bird. You know what a Heine bird is? A Heine bird is a bird that flies in perfectly executed concentric circles until eventually he finds up his own behind and poof, disappears forever. Oh,
that is classic. That is classic. And Hawk, I've got a question for you. Last week when it was announced that you won the Ford Frick Award, I quickly put together a highlight package. I listened back to your call of that perfect game, the Mark Burley game. And now just recalling it, I'm getting chills because of not only the athletic feat by Burley and the White Sox, the great defense there in the ninth inning, but also your call, Hawk. It was so special, the emotion, the right words, the right timing, and when to say things. It was, for all young broadcasters, I mean, that is a textbook way to call a momentous moment in baseball. I just want to ask you, can you tell us what your recollections of that moment were?
Yeah, I can. Of all the thousands of games that I've ever done, that was my all-time favorite thing. Because part of it, because Mark Burley is such a wonderful person. I mean, you know, you get guys like Mark Burley, you get guys like Robin Ventura, you get guys like the Big Hurt, Frank Thomas. These guys, I love these guys. I loved our players. And when he did that, you know, after the game was over, I had my 100-mile drive down to Granger, Indiana. And I cried most of the way because I called two perfect games. I called, I think, 11 no-hitters. And when you get somebody like this special person like Mark is, then it means if you get a guy out there who's an asshole and he does that, then you just pat him on the behind, you know, after the game's over, say, nice going. But when a special guy like a Burley does that, or Ventura hits a grand slam, which he did a lot of times, or the Big Hurt wins the ball game for you, it's a special feeling, a special meaning. And that's why that's my all-time. I call, you know, Tommy's 500th home run. I call something that maybe will never be called again. And that's two guys in consecutive at-bats, Falk and Erico in Detroit, and Jermaine Dye in Detroit, both hit their 300th home runs. Now, that probably will never be accomplished again in consecutive at-bats. So, but Burley, you're right. That's my all-time favorite game.
Outstanding. Thank you very much for being on the bottom.
And I'll tell you what.
Yes, please.
Steve Stone was part of that call because he laid out. He saw where I was emotionally and everything, and Steve laid out. And I didn't realize it at the time. It took me a while to realize what he did because he's a pro. And he let me and my emotion take over. And that was a huge part of that call.
Mm. Yeah, it was, Hawk. I'll tell you what. And you've been a huge part of not only baseball history in Chicago and other places. I mean, I remember the Nehru. You were a rebel way back when. You had the Nehru jackets, which means you got to
Hey, don't ruin my day. Don't ruin my day.
You had the dune buggy. Hey, if social media would have been around then, you would have been bigger than a ball, my friend, and you were. Great job, and we appreciate it. And thanks for calling me the other day. I couldn't believe it. I go, it's Hawk. And I was going to wait a couple days, but, man, you know, until everything settled, like now. And I guess everything still
I love you, and B. You know that.
It was very gracious of you, Hawk. And BB loves you. And, Aris, give our best to the family, okay?
You got it, buddy. Don't you ever change.
I won't. Don't worry. Don't you ever change. Love you, my friend.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. Hawk Harrelson.
What a great moment. Another great moment here at Bears Barroom History. Mike North, Hawk Harrelson, for over 30 minutes.
I dug in on everything about it, man.
Oh, man. It was classic stuff. I mean, really a fabulous, fabulous conversation. Over 30 minutes of great stories.
Yeah, we got another hour probably with all the stuff that's going on.
Yeah, we do. We do. Want to start talking some NFL?
Yeah, I first want to say I want to get everybody up to snuff. Tomorrow's Accountability Tuesday outs. Mm-hmm. And then we got Vegas Scores and Odds. I had a great week. Also on Bears Barroom, Vegas Scores and Odds Advantage, 2-1. With the odds couple, I was 1-2-1. I needed that half point. I wish I would have had it for Carolina. I got a push. That's better than a loss. Sometimes a tie is perfect. You'd rather have that than a loss. So you know what? Everything's good. We're kicking ass. And Vegas Scores and Odds had a great, great weekend. I'm on top of three of the leaderboards again. Denny Macklin's cooled off a little bit, but he's still doing a great job, as the rest of the handicappers are. Check things out at Vegas Scores and Odds. Follow us at Vegas Scores and Odds Sports, and check them out at VegasScoresAndOdds.com. Eldo?
Well, I'll tell you one thing, Mike. Your record here at Vegas Scores and Odds Advantage with Mike North, this show is a moneymaker.
It's 27-19. 27-19 right now.
And with the free picks that you do every Wednesday, you are now up to 11-4, Mike, over the last 4 weeks. That is outstanding work. Congratulations.
Well, thank you, buddy. And I had Navy big, and Army had covered against Navy. Now, for people that want to rehash it, we could do it Wednesday, but I had Montreal in the over in hockey. It went Montreal in the under, so I went 1-1. So I needed Navy to have another winning week, and that's exactly what happened. They hadn't covered over the last 3 years. Army had been giving them all they could handle, and the Navy just went out and just stomped them. I think it was 31-7, something like that, and I knew I had a win for it. Hey, look, if you just take the picks over the last 2 years on our show, there's nobody better than us. Eldo's like the road manager for the Beatles. He don't know what an empty seat is. He don't know what an empty seat is, because
that's right.
We've been winning since the beginning. He don't know what, hey, Mike, like a lot of these other shows, hey, here's Jimmy Joe. Jimmy, you're 10-52. What's the problem? You know what I'm saying? We don't play that. We win.
I hear you, brother. I hear you. All right, let's talk some NFL. Week 15 was another big week. Five teams joined the playoffs, so that's a total now of eight teams in the playoffs. Four spots are still open. I think there's a total of 14 teams that were eliminated, and that includes, unfortunately, the Chicago Bears, big-time losers at Lambeau Field, 13-21. The Packers did cover. They were giving in some places as many as 5.5, 5.5, 4.5 was the last I looked. Mike, your thoughts on this loss by the Chicago Bears?
Well, you know what? First of all, it was one of my two main picks on Vegas Scores and Odds. I had the Chiefs big, and then I had the Bears. So I couldn't say anything, but there was no way from what I had. It was one of my major picks of the last month. That the Bears, in other words, what I was seeing is they didn't belong on the same field. So I give them credit for staying there, but this was supposed to be the division winner over the next 4 or 5 years. All of a sudden, Green Bay is back. We've taken a step back, and I saw all the Great Bear Barroom tweets, because Eldo and I, once Eldo hits a tweet, I retweet it. That's how you build what we've built up, along with everybody on Bears Barroom chipping in. But you know what? And even Rick Morrissey wrote about it today. And although yesterday you did tweet it, and I'm with you on this, but the, okay, we tried hard till the end, it's admirable, but what Rick Morrissey was trying to say is that the new standard we're setting for the Bears after a bad year, that they played hard? Now, Hawk Harrelson just said the same thing you said.
Right.
The White Sox play hard, and he's absolutely right. So I think there's some value to that. But I think the execution, even the last play, if that kid just turns his head to the right and laterals, he's in. And that's the first thing you're supposed to do, once you pick up that ball on the fumble, what they did is look for the lateral. It didn't happen. Look, I give them credit for trying, but it's a disappointing year.
Very disappointing, and of course you're referring to Jesper Horsted, the tight end that was just brought up onto the active roster 3 games ago on this sort of Stanford band play that the Bears ran to try to pull off a miracle.
He was going to make it in.
Yeah,
he thought he was going to outrun everybody instead of looking to his left and looking to his right, which they're trained to do.
Right. Well, and one of the things they're not trained to do is to tuck the ball under. When you're running that kind of play, you've got to have the ball extended with two hands on a ball. That way you can lateral it. immediately, but he had the ball tucked in, and by the time he saw Allen Robinson off to the right, he just couldn't get the ball over to him, and that's too bad because that would have been a miracle conclusion, and it would have probably forced overtime, but it would have been a miracle moment at Lambeau. Tell me about this Bears offense. It started off again slowly. I kind of calculated, I don't have the exact number in front of me, but on first down, this team was horrendous. Multiple plays where there were negative yards or 0 yards or 1 yard. They had only one explosive yard play of over 10, 15 yards for most of the game. It was just a step back until the fourth quarter when the defense of the Packers was starting to play back a little bit and Trubisky had opportunities to get the ball downfield. What is your take on this Chicago Bears offense and where's your level of frustration with them?
Well, I never thought they were going to win from the beginning of the game. There was no fire.
Yeah.
And like you said, on first downs, we couldn't get anything. And, you know, the running game, okay, we picked up 96 yards. But choppy 96 yards, you know? No long runs. No, you know, not a lot of broken tackles. They basically train against the pass. They try. They don't care if people run on them. But, you know, they're talented enough, Green Bay, to stop it. But to me, it was a boring game. It was a boring game. It wasn't conducive to what the score is. They were one score away. It didn't get exciting, like you said, until the fourth quarter. But you're a smart guy. You know as well as I do. They were playing off. They don't want to make any stupid mistake that's going to give the Bears the game. And yet they almost made that stupid mistake, and the Bears executed that Stanford play beautifully.
Yeah.
All they had to do was finish it up, and you know, then they would have had to hit, I know, a two-pointer. So, you know, the odds were still against us. But, you know, you just don't understand why they don't get going until the late third or fourth quarter, and that seems to be the pattern with this team. I know at the beginning of the year they scripted plays and they were okay early, and then that went away also.
Duke Martin in the chat room says that the defense's tackling for this game against the Packers was awful, and I have to agree. It was just abysmal, wasn't it? My goodness.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? They keep you off the scoreboard, but they let teams extend drives. I mean, you know, takes away from time of possession. If you wrap up somebody and tackle them after a 3-yard gain instead of, you know, two guys missing tackles and the guy gets a 15-yard gain, that extends the clock, that extends drives, that tires out the defense, and that's what happened with the Bears. It was sloppy tackling yesterday. I hear rumors to cut training camps a country club, but I thought it's the way it is with most training camps. But I'm anxious to see, like I've said on prior shows, that what he's going to do next year is, I want to see if he's going to change his style at all. I want to see if he still believes in not playing the starters in preseason. I watched the Rams yesterday. The two teams that we touted for resting their starters last year, and everybody bragged about them, well, I'm going to tell everybody it didn't work this year.
That's
so
right.
I'm going to take it the other way. So maybe you better go back and play some of your starters, because neither team seemed interested yesterday in winning the football game.
Danny Trevathan, Akeem Hicks, Prince Amukamara, all guys that were well-rested in training camp, all have suffered significant injuries this year on the defense. So that theory about protecting players in training camp, I don't know if it really is something that you can bank on, that's for sure.
Well, no, not if you – look, my philosophy's always been, because I'm a big boxing fan, and if Rocky Marciano would have boxed 3 days a week and rested four, he would have never been heavyweight champ of the world.
Right.
If you put the work in, boxer spar, Sugar Ray Leonard, if he took 2 days a week off, guess what? He's in trouble. You've got to spar. That's why I don't understand where the NFL doesn't play their starters in games. I know you're afraid they're going to get hurt, but you know what? That's always going to happen. There's always going to be injuries. You want the rest of the team, I know, to be ready. But you cannot be getting off the starts like the Bears and the Rams did this year, you know, and then say to yourself, well, we're just not clicking yet. Well, because you didn't play. You didn't practice. Practice is important. I've always, and given 100%. I saw the Bear team. They gave 100%, but you know what? That's just fake rah-rah stuff at the end of the day.
Yep, I'm with you. Now, I think you and I are alike. We don't blame referees when a team loses or wins and so forth. But yesterday there was a call on Cordero Patterson on the punt team where he was called for interference with the punt returner who was making a catch. He didn't call for a fair catch. He caught the ball, and then a second later, Patterson hit him in the chest, knocked the ball loose. The Bears have the ball at midfield, but instead he was called for a penalty. The Packers instead get the ball on the Bears' 35-yard line and end up scoring the first touchdown in the game and keeping momentum for the Packers for that first half. What are your thoughts about that play, and really, what kind of an impact did it have on the game?
It had a huge impact. Dean Blandino even brought it up.
Yep.
He even said that call was bogus. And he said that changed the game. You can't have a call like that. And, you know, I don't understand why they don't tell you when refs are going to be replaced or fired. You have a list that you read in the paper of football players that get cut every week.
Uh-huh.
So I want to start seeing officials named in the paper. So-and-so who blew this game. So-and-so who had a bad grading year. So-and-so who missed two calls and is gone. Why are officials protected when owners aren't protected? GMs aren't protected. Players aren't protected. Hell, writers aren't protected. Entertainers aren't protected. Why are officials protected? I've never understood that. You want to know that these guys aren't, because you know why they're protected? Because they're an old guys, a member of the old boys club. They don't care. I mean, I see this kid Hockley because his dad was a ref. He's a ref. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it's an old boys club, just like umpires. You'll see umpires. I remember Shad Crawford. He's got his nephews in there now. I mean, they got 15 umpires from the same family. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I want to see that start to happen. I want the guy to change the whole rule on pass interference. Whatever happened to that guy? Do we even know?
No, I don't.
Remember last year in New Orleans?
Absolutely.
Whatever happened to that guy? He get fired? Or is he going to do the Super Bowl? I have no idea.
He's probably going to be the head of the officials when they fire the guy that's in there now, with Riveron, whatever his name is.
It's unbelievable.
Matt Nagy at Monday's press conference says that he plans on playing his starters for the final two games despite the fact that there are no playoff implications for...
But he won't play him in preseason. You got two games that mean nothing now. So you're going to play a team hit so he gets hurt more. Or you're going to play Trubisky so he gets his leg broken.
That's priceless.
I mean, are you kidding me? What's the difference between preseason and this? Your record? You blew it, son. You blew it.
That is priceless. I'm with you. I mean, isn't this the time you take these two games to take a look at the backup cornerback, Tolliver, and you know Prince Amukamara could be a guy that you're going to drop next season. Why put him out there, especially with a bad hamstring? Akeem Hicks, a guy who left the game.
They can let go of Prince Amukamara anytime they want, okay?
That's right.
You were big on him.
I thought he played well, and then I got bombarded with tweets saying this
guy's... I didn't know if you had him over for dinner. I didn't know what happened. If you guys were buddies, if you went to school together. All of a sudden, I go, when did Prince Amukamara become Charles Woodson? That's all I want to know.
He's royalty, Mike. He's royalty. He's Prince.
He's about as royalty as Eddie Murphy was at Coming to America.
By the way, Mike.
I understand. Look, we should have kept Amos.
Yes, tell me about it.
He ends up going to Green Bay. Who's the dummy? He's not. God bless him.
Yeah.
Look at him.
He's, yeah. All right. I want to, before we talk about some.
Yeah, you didn't
want to
spend a lot of time talking about that.
No, I'm brokenhearted by that whole thing.
I understand.
Before we start talking about some of the other games, I want to get your opinion on the Green Bay Packers and whether they have some legitimate chances of going to the Super Bowl. Aaron Rodgers was not real happy with some of the questioning from the Green Bay media. They were asking questions about the offense and the fact that they're still not running like a well-oiled machine. This was Rodgers after the game.
I don't know that we have the full respect of the entire league at this point, based on some of our performances you know, where we got beat by a couple scores and kind of the reaction, I would assume, to those situations. But we're 7-1 at home. You know, we have an inside track at the 2 seed. Obviously, we have an opportunity to wrap up the division next week. I like our chances. I like our football team.
How do you assess their chances of going far into the playoffs and maybe making another Super Bowl appearance, which would be Aaron Rodgers' second in his long career?
I love it. Nobody believes in him. Nobody. Have you heard anybody say, Green Bay's winning it all? Have you heard anybody?
Nope.
I think if you have Aaron Rodgers, I'm not a big fan, but I like how he acted. Hey, how do you think we feel? We're not in. They're in, and they're giving them a hard time.
Yeah.
Did people forget last year when the Bears took that division by storm?
Yeah.
And we just can't repeat. That's the thing that makes me mad about the Bears. Look, we don't have, I still say we have the fourth best quarterback in the division. We got the fourth best quarterback in the division. So no matter how much Mitch improves, he'll never be Aaron Rodgers. He'll never be Matthew Stafford, I don't think, except he'll be healthier, hopefully. And Kirk Cousins is on fire. I watched him yesterday night. So that's the first problem we have. I think as long as you got Aaron Rodgers, you always got a slugger's chance, don't you think?
I absolutely agree. I know that his performance level is not what it's been like in the past. I know there's been a lot of commentators. For instance, your old buddy, your old coworker, Greenberg, on his show, took a shot at Rodgers, saying that he's not the quarterback that he used to be. But I also think that a lot of people are overlooking the fact that he really has only one wide receiver on
right.
that team. I mean, if anything, they should call Jordy Nelson back up now, because the chemistry that those guys have, Rodgers and Jordy Nelson, would help this team immensely, because they don't have a reliable number two wide receiver. And I think that's a big part of Aaron Rodgers' problems this year. He just doesn't have guys that know how to run the right routes, who have a rapport with that quarterback, something that you've been preaching. Jordy Nelson should be playing for the Packers.
Now, let me also say this to everybody out there. Greeny also said that Clayton Kershaw may be the best pitcher who ever pitched in the game of baseball. He wasn't even the best pitcher in the Dodgers franchise. But he also said that Tiger Woods would make a comeback, and I doubted him. So I'm going to give Greeny that. Greeny is opinionated. He comes from the Score, God bless him, Originals. Okay, but I would ask him this. Put Aaron Rodgers on the Minnesota Vikings with Diggs, with Thielen, with Rudolph.
Oh.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And then what? Tell me he's finished.
Yeah.
You know, I just think it's the personnel around him, just like with Brady. Everybody's getting on Brady's ass. Gronkowski retired. The guy just made the top 100 all-time football team.
Mm.
All-time.
Yep.
He's got three Super Bowl, four, I don't know how many he's got. The guy just retired at 30. That's like, are you kidding me? If any other team lost a player of his magnitude, they wouldn't have the record that New England has. They wouldn't.
That's right.
That's why, you know what, I know that everybody's panning Rodgers and everybody's panning Brady and everybody else, but I'm going to tell you, in the playoffs, if one of those two guys was our quarterback, the Bears would make the playoffs if Brady or Rodgers were our quarterback. That's all I'm saying.
Can't argue that. Anybody that does would be a fool.
And would Green Bay make the playoffs if Trubisky was the quarterback? That's the thing. This is what you're missing. Common sense. Core values, ladies and gentlemen. Would the Green Bay Packers or New England Patriots make the playoffs with Mitch Trubisky at quarterback?
Only if Mitch Trubisky was buying the tickets. I guess
but
that's
I'll tell you this, the Bears, look, I watched Matt Ryan yesterday. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Matt Ryan, if I had to take one quarterback that I could have for the Bears, I'd take him. Because he needs a change of scenery. They kept playing hard. Talk about a team that was left for dead. They were talking about getting rid of that Quinn after 4 weeks.
That's right.
And they go and they beat up on teams like San Francisco.
Huge.
I mean, they're still trying.
Yep, they're still playing hard, absolutely.
Would you like Matt Ryan as the Bears quarterback?
Well, you know, that's a long discussion. At this point, I think that you have to keep your chips in with Mitch Trubisky. Give him another year.
I love you and I've been friends. We're buddies, right?
Yes,
Aldo, we've been friends for a while now. Yeah. I mean, we confide in each other. We know what's going on in each other's lives. It's really not a long discussion to say whether you'd want Matt Ryan. Yeah. I didn't say he was going to replace your guy Trubisky. I didn't say that.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, Matt Ryan is definitely a better quarterback than Mitch Trubisky. So if you're asking me, you know, kind of hypothetical, yeah, Matt Ryan and just
about Tannehill. I'd be afraid to have Tannehill come in. The Bears would ruin him. Maybe it's the Bears.
That's right.
Maybe. How about this? I'll turn everything around. If Trubisky had the coaching.
Uh-huh. There you go.
That's, of Andy Reid.
Right.
Or the coaching of a Kyle Shanahan or somebody else. Would he be better?
I think so. I mean, I do believe that Matt Nagy is a huge part of the problem. And then the quarterback coach, your old buddy Dave Rangone, who won you a lot of money when he was the quarterback.
I love
over
Dave Rangone.
That's right. He won you a lot of money, so I know why you
love him. He's my buddy. We might have to get him on. I got to thank him for a game against Florida State. They covered 11.
Well, don't tell him, if we have him on, don't tell him that I feel like perhaps he has not fulfilled his obligation of turning this quarterback into a top-notch quarterback. I mean, he's been his
quarterback. Are we going to blame Rangone? Are we going to blame the chef himself, Matt Nagy?
I'm blaming them all.
There you go. Yep. That's fair.
Yeah, I think it's also the offensive line coach. I mean, come on. This Harry Easton guy comes from Notre Dame. Everybody thinks he's Buddha. He's a guru. He's doing this and
Harry
doing that.
Harry Easton, didn't he, like, wasn't he supposed to fly with Rockne that day? He's been around.
He's been around, that's right.
Man, that guy's been around forever.
I think he
I've been here since I was in sixth grade, Harry Easton.
He rubbed shoulders with Rockne and Hallis, absolutely.
he told Frank Lee to screw off. He never brought drinks. I mean, he's been around for a while.
Yep, that's for sure. All right, let's...
Wow. You're right, though. It's the whole coaching staff.
Yeah, it's indeed the entire coaching staff. And Mike, maybe we should just finish talking about the Bears here, and then save the rest of these NFL games for Wednesday's show. The show.
That's a good idea, Hansel, because we stayed on with Hawk. It was important.
Oh yes,
it's a big get for the bar room. We waited a little bit. I just felt that the first couple. He can't believe how many people have called him.
It's amazing.
And stuff. I mean, it's just amazing. But you know what? What I said was true. We have not actually heard hardly anybody say he didn't deserve to get in.
Were you surprised at all? I mean, really, honestly, were you surprised?
Yes. I think he's hated by half the baseball brethren.
Yes,
I do.
I agree.
I think he's hated from back in the 60s. We all get our reputations. He quit two or three times on teams. I mean, he broke his leg. He got out of there. He went to play golf. He came back. He left. He quit middle of the season. And then he wore the Nehru's. I mean, you know, the established baseball fan in 1967-68, Aldo, wasn't ready for their baseball player to be wearing medals and a Nehru and driving in a dune buggy. You know? he was something else. I loved him.
Yeah.
I think the two best showmen of the 60s. You know who I should try to get on? A good friend of mine, Joe Pepitone.
Oh, my
that
goodness.
That guy. Joe Pepitone is my favorite Cub ever, maybe.
Really?
He was so cool when we were kids.
Oh, my gosh.
Remember?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
He had the bar, Joe Pepitone sing down on Division.
That's right.
He had the long hair.
Uh-huh. Super Playboy.
Yeah, you know what I mean? You remember him?
Oh, yeah. Super Playboy. Playboy came over from the New York.
Playboy.
Came from the New York Yankees, a left-handed batter. He had the reputation.
He was the best kickball player to ever come out of New York in the Yankees.
Yeah, exactly.
I played for him at the Cup Fantasy Camp.
Is that right?
He was the manager. He was so hungover every day. You know, I come walking in.
It's my guy.
I come walking into the locker room. He's face down on the on the trainer's table, out like a light.
And you were too, weren't you?
I mean, we reported the play, and he was just a great guy. Great stories of good times. I mean, Joe Pepitone. I'm going to try to find him. Mm. Joey's one of the all-time great guys and a cool cop.
Yeah.
Really. Murph, I never have talked to Murph about him. I'm going to have to talk to Murph about Joe Pepitone.
Oh, yeah, you should bring the Murph on, too. You guys talking
I'm
about baseball
Murph
stuff.
Murph's tough. Murph's tough.
Bring him in and see if he can come.
He's got like 17 pounds to put in a 4-pound bag, you know?
That's right.
Here's my Murphy. He's a man with a plan. I used to love his theme song.
Oh, yeah, he did a really nice show.
Murph did a good job for the score.
Yes.
Great job.
All right, so a few more thoughts on this Bears-Packers game. Mike, I know this is going to set you off because you have been critical of the Bears' running game, and you need to continue to do so because here are some interesting stats that I just saw on Twitter. In the two games that the Bears...
Well, at least you got it from a reliable source.
Well, it's Kevin Fishbane over at the Athletic.
Okay. Well, that's different.
He's a good reporter and a friend of the barroom. In the two games the Bears have played the Packers, the Bears have zero rushes for over 10 yards. They had a 3.4 yards per carry. And in the rest of the 12 games that the Packers have played this season, they have given up 36 rushes for 10 yards. That's averaging 3 a game and giving up 5 yards per carry. Why can't the Chicago Bears get a run game going against this Packers defense? I don't get it.
Because they play good against teams that are weak against the run. Their offensive line, it opened up some holes the last couple weeks. Here's what I'm going to say about my guy Montgomery. He'll always be what he is. I don't think someday we're going to wake up and he's going to have 1,500 yards. Okay, I don't think someday we're going to wake up and you're going to go, see, Mike, I told you he'd average 5.2 yards a carry. You know, that's never going to happen. I think what you see is what you get, a tough kid who will get better. But Raymond Harris was Raymond Harris. You know, every runner the Bears have had has reached their pinnacle and stayed there. Neil Anderson, until he got hurt. They actually got rid of Peyton for him. I mean, you know, I wanted Walter to play another year. I think Montgomery, at the most, will average 4 yards a carry someday. He'll be a grinding back. He'll be maybe a poor man's Jordan Howard. That's what I think, and I don't blame him alone. I blame Nagy. I blame the whole offense. I blame their lack of direction, not knowing whether not running when they should pass, not passing when they should run. I just think a lot of things came into play. I think next year he'll be better, hopefully. Hopefully we can pick up a lineman or two in the draft and help the kid.
Yep.
But I just thought the whole thing was unnecessary. But, you know, Howard's hurt, so it doesn't matter. Philadelphia really hasn't yesterday was the first time they showed up without him in 3-4 weeks when he wasn't in the lineup. But I just think that's what you get with them, don't you, Eldo?
I agree with you. I totally agree with you. And then another interesting thing happened at yesterday's press conference with Mitch Trubisky. He was asked about the Packers' pass rush, and his response was, I feel we could have done more things to take the pressure off the offensive line. Like, for instance, moving the pocket a little bit more, calling more of certain plays that would have nullified the offensive line. We could have done things to help those guys. That, to me, Mike, is a shot at the head coach, Matt Nagy, who calls the plays. And let me add in one other fact. He went back to throw 56 times. You know how many draw plays were called? Running plays that were draws? Just one. Just one against a pass rush that's on him like a white on rice. I mean, Matt Nagy, I don't think he knows how to call a game. I don't think he does.
Well, I'll tell you this. He's got a big year ahead of him next year. Matt Nagy.
Yes.
He's got one grace period year. The honeymoon's over. I think Pace knows that, too. I don't know if they're going to go out and get another quarterback. But here, I'll give everybody an example. Let's say Eldo is on some radio magazine or something, and he's quoted or he's on some interview, and he says, you know, we had fun doing the shows with Mike, and we still do a great time with Mike, but I think Mike could give a little bit more or add a couple bumpers or something. We just feel that way. How do you think I'd feel? You know?
Right. Exactly.
Right? Or if I say, you know, Aldo did a great job. There's mm-hmm. no doubt about it.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes, you know, when I'd ask him a question, he'd be getting something ready or... Oh, wait, that stuff's true. I don't want to bring that shit. Wait. No, but you know what I'm talking about.
I do.
If you criticize somebody in your family
sure.
on a team,
mm-hmm.
you don't think Maggie's reading that today and going, what the hell is he saying, man?
Absolutely.
Yeah, but then you look at 56 passes. Is that what you just told me?
Yep. 56 times he went to throw
You're
back.
You're never winning a game when you... How many teams have thrown 56 passes in one?
I don't think very many, that's for sure.
Dan Fouts used to throw that many, and they'd lose 59 to 56.
That's right.
Remember?
Oh, yeah.
They go, Dan Fouts threw for 7 touchdowns, 755 yards, was 51 for 67, and they lost 71 to 63.
How true is that? How true
right?
is that? Absolutely.
Every week he'd win all the... Well, if there would have been leagues back then, he'd win all the fantasy leagues, and he always would finish out of the playoffs in regular football.
Yep, yep.
Right?
Yep, yeah, absolutely. Now,
what a show today.
What a show. What a show.
Listen, but we're consistent. We show up every week, Bears. Right?
That's right. That's
How
right.
did you think your guy Akeem Hicks played yesterday?
I thought, you know, he looked like he had been eating a lot during his time off, didn't he? He looked like he gained 20 pounds.
When I just said, how do you guys think the guy Akeem Hicks did yesterday? When you give me the two he's. When you're doing the two he's.
That's right.
You know how you can tell with that? You gave me the back-to-back he's. When you get back-to-back he's, you're in trouble. You're right. The guy looked like he put on 75 pounds.
I know. He looked heavy. God bless him.
My God. Right?
It was Thanksgiving while he was injured, so, you know, maybe he's still got a lot of turkey.
When you're that big.
Oh, my gosh.
The turkeys run for their lives. They say, him come to the store, they come to life. He's got it, though. It's a big year for him to come back. They need him.
Yes, they definitely need him.
You know what the Patriots are missing? Did you see any of the Patriots game?
I saw highlights only.
Remember the big fat guys they would always have in the middle?
Oh, yeah.
Remember that guy with the bib overalls, the big fat guy?
Oh, my goodness. Somebody in the chat room help me out because, this guy was...
I remember Tony Siracusa with the Ravens.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, how come these teams that have, like, one guy that takes up 3 spots...
Right, right.
You can't run against them, right?
Right.
I think the guy's name was Sam Adams or something. I don't know.
No.
Who was the guy... I forget who the guy was from New England.
Yeah, hold on. Let me do a quick search on the Google machine here.
Look up big fat guy on New England.
Big fat defensive lineman.
They never... Now I'm watching New England yesterday, and the Bengals got beat
mm-hmm.
because they stink. But they were... This Joe Mixon was running wild.
Yeah.
Nobody up the middle for New England. That's going to hurt them.
That is. You're absolutely right.
You find a guy? You didn't find him, did you?
I think I do. Let me see.
Put up nose tackle. Big nose tackle. New England.
I'm looking at a picture of him, but where's his name? Come on. Where are you? Oh, my goodness.
Hold on. You want me to go on the black box?
Yeah, let's see who can do it first.
All right.
You go.
New England nose guards. Big fat guys.
Here are some pictures that match.
Tom Brady, a big... Oh, here he is. I found him.
Yeah, I see his picture, but I'm missing
Vince Wilfork.
That's him.
Big fat Vince Wilfork. That's who the Bears need. Like, if Akeem Hicks gets like him, I remember Tractor Trailer with the Bears and Washington, Ted Washington.
Yes, yes. Huge
those
guy.
Those were two monsters. Yes. Nobody ran on those guys.
Nobody. And Brian Urlacher should have bought those guys Humvees or something, because they really cleared the way.
I thought I lost. Listen, Urlacher, I'm glad he's gone. I had enough of the guy. And then I got to drive down the highway and see 55 billboards with his face on it. I can't run from the guy. I can't get away from the guy. He's all over the place. God bless him.
I know.
How much money has he made from being bald and getting hair sewn on his head? That's unbelievable.
You're absolutely right. We got a lot of people in the chat room who are not from the Chicago area. And I got to tell you, when the next time you guys come to Chicago, be wary that when you start driving around the highways in Chicago, you are going to run into tons and tons of billboards with Brian Urlacher and his fake hair.
Every time I'm on the Kennedy, there's like 15 billboards. I see more of him on the Kennedy than I did in half the games he played. Believe me when I tell you this. And then at the end of the game, he'd be credited with 55 tackles.
That's amazing.
You know?
All right. We have...
Vegas Scores and Odds. What a time we had today. Thank you, Hawk Harrelson. Thank you, Aldo. Thank you, DB. Go to Aldo Gandia. Bears Barroom, VSAO Sports, Vegas Scores and Odds. I'll have games up. I have the Indy game tonight up there with the Saints. Indy and the Saints. I got the total. I got the side. Wait, let me sit down. I got a dizzy spell. Yeah, I'm better anyway. That's what I'm going to tell you. Great job, Aldo.
Great job, too. Boy, you and Hawkwood, that's just, I got to send that over to the Museum of Broadcast right now. That was outstanding stuff.
You know what? I don't care about that. I can't wait till it's up, because seriously, this is the honest to God. Oh, believe me when I tell you this. It's my favorite show. It's my favorite show. The Odds Couple, for some reason, and Bears Barroom, the VSAO Advantage, the two best shows. What can I tell you? Well, love you, buddy.
I love you too, brother. Take care.